It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Last week, the city of Des Moines made headlines by painting over a mural being created by students at Des Moines Central Campus under the tutelage of a local graffiti artist. The program that organized the project, Run DSM, is working out an agreement with the city to repaint, but this whole experience also made us curious about this unusual project. And with me now are the co-founders of Run DSM. Christopher Rollins is here. Hello, Christopher.
Hello, how is everyone?
Great. And Emily Lang is also here. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
And first, I want to start by talking about the mural, which, of course, a lot of people have been talking about in the last week or so. But let's go back before the controversy. What was the idea behind this project?
Yeah, you know, one of the many workshops that we've been gearing towards kind of creating was a graffiti workshop with our youth. We work a lot in the elements of hip-hop culture, and so that was one of the elements that we were kind of moving towards after we kind of, I think, got really good at emceeing and spoken word poetry. And so about a year and a half ago, when teaching at Central, we were on the third floor and looked down, and there's this, you know, huge retention wall that separates the river from the railroad tracks. And so we started kind of dreaming a little bit, like, wouldn't it be really cool if we could create a mural on the inside of that wall so that our students on the third floor could see that? And so once we kind of figured out who we were supposed to be talking to in the city, out of a few of those conversations, the city actually came back to us and said, how about painting both sides of the wall so that the community can also see what's happening, and it'll save us money on graffiti abatement. And so, you know, we were kind of surprised and shocked that they came back with that. I think that we went in with, you know, just wanting this kind of minimal thing, thinking that we would potentially run into issues as it was. So we were very surprised to hear them come back and say, why not do both sides? So that's kind of how that process really started.
Now, I think some people in seeing this project have said, we don't actually want young people doing graffiti. What are we doing facilitating their education in becoming graffiti artists? So why we can do murals in a lot of different styles? Why graffiti?
Well, I think graffiti is such an culturally relevant art form that isn't often recognized in the public school setting. And even though the term graffiti carries with it oftentimes a negative connotation, it's simply a style of art. And it's a style of art that many of our young people are interested in. So we see this as an opportunity to provide our young people with safe and legal spaces to practice their craft and become stronger writers. And so we want to provide our young people those legal spaces so that they are less likely to go out and tag something illegally.
Well, and I think a lot of people also, in thinking about graffiti, think that you get a can of spray paint and you go out and do it. What kind of a preparation process did your students go through to learn how to do this and to start creating their artwork on that wall?
They went through a really intense process. The artist that we work with, the local artist, Asphate, who is, you know, been doing graffiti writing for years and years, really takes them back to the history of graffiti. And students started workshopping in the fall for 8 weeks. They met once a week at the Des Moines Social Club. And before they were even able to pick up a can, they have to understand the history and have an appreciation for it. So they met for 8 weeks in the fall. And then they came back and met for an additional 8 weeks in the spring. And in order to even be invited to take part in that large-scale mural behind Central Campus, they had to meet attendance requirements, and Asphate had to feel comfortable with them and their growth in order to pull them out of school for a day, to even allow them, you know, to use a spray can. And so it's definitely not something that anyone can just pick up. It's very meticulous. It's a really articulate process that goes into the creation of it. I'm absolutely fascinated by the work that is done on such a large scale. So yeah, kids really had to put in the time in order to get the reward at the end.
And give me an idea of how much time and how much money was invested in this project before it was painted over.
Yeah, I think they worked approximately anywhere from 50 to 100 hours in total in preparation. Costs, you know, close to $4,000 with paint, you know, paying our artist stipends. And one of our artists actually came in from another state. And so part of that money also went towards his plane ticket to bring him here.
How did the kids react?
When the mural was erased or during the process of creating it?
No, when the mural was erased.
Yeah, you know, I think that we had some emotions across the board. You know, I've mentioned that some of them were in tears as we had found out that Fate was getting ready to put some finishing touches on the mural the day that it was erased or the day before or the day after it was erased, I'm sorry. One of them was going to be for Kendall Foster, who was a student at North High that was lost to a shooting. And so, you know, I think that as a result of that, there were a lot of emotions that were kind of compounded as well. Some students were very angry, just very frustrated, very upset. And some of them, I think, matter of fact, were just very confused. They did not know how someone could look at that work and just automatically assume that it was done illegally or without, you know, proper channels being asked. And so a lot of them really didn't even understand what had happened when we first told them. They kind of came back and were like, so wait, so it's just not there anymore? And you're like, yeah. So,
you know, and so many of our young people, I think, feel silenced or marginalized or voiceless. And one of the things that we strive to do within our organization is to validate our young people, to validate their voices, to validate their stories, their experiences, and their artistic creations. So I certainly do not think that the intention of erasing the murals was meant to invalidate them, but I think that metaphorically, that's what it did, is it made them feel as if their art and the work that they had done didn't matter. And I think that was, above all else, the most disheartening thing about the whole situation.
And, of course, in other media sources, the disagreement between you and the city has been hashed out in a number of different ways. Things are a little bit confusing. But can you tell me where your communications with the city stand right now?
Our communication is we're looking at next steps. We have received a contract that's been signed and executed for the artists and the young people to begin working on the mural again. As of today, they could go out and work. Our artist from Phoenix is actually flying back Friday, so I believe they'll begin the work either Friday or Saturday. But we have received a contract to execute approximately 200-foot mural on the south wall outside of Central Campus. And our next steps are to get another contract so that we can have ownership at least for a 3 to 4 year time period over the remainder of the south wall and then the north facing wall that actually is only seen to Central Campus. So we are able to redo the portion of the mural that was erased, but we want to continue to get approval for the wall that just so that we can continue these murals and other young people can go through the process, that rigorous process of learning the art of graffiti writing and then have, you know, more of a permanent canvas to showcase their work on that reaches audiences that they may never reach coming to a show or just seeing their work in a gallery space.
And I realize the school year is coming to an end very soon. Does this give you enough time to redo that work?
Yeah, our hope is that we could definitely at least get the 200-foot mural that was erased back up in a timely fashion. It is kind of a race against time with the school year ending. But I also think that, as Emily mentioned, with the goals of the rest of the wall, it's just kind of a natural thing for us then to begin those conversations again when the fall season hits back up.
Now, I understand that a lot of people in the Des Moines area are familiar with Des Moines Central Campus, but for a lot of us outside of the Des Moines area, this is a little bit confusing. I mean, Des Moines Central Campus is not a high school, but it's a resource for high school students in the Des Moines area. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you do there?
Yeah, Central is a career and tech educational school, which, you know, really provides, I think, a lot of options for students that aren't maybe engaged in their everyday schooling. And so even students from the metro areas here in Des Moines can take classes at Central Campus, and they can make up for other extracurriculars that they might be interested in. And so it really is this hub of creativity and innovation, and allows, I think, youth to find potential career paths that just can't really exist within the confines of a typical high school.
Our program at Central Campus is Urban Leadership, and it's a two-year program. Students can only take it for the first year, but they can also elect for a second year. And what we do is we look at an in-depth study of major social movements and social justice issues that have affected urban communities from throughout history. So we open our Urban Leadership 101 class with immigrant rights. We move on to Black Lives Matter. We look at the war on poverty. We move to women's rights. And then we close the year with LGBTQ rights. And that's our first year. And then the students that elect to take the second year come back. And we really dive even deeper into issues affecting urban communities within the public education system, as well as the nonprofit sector. And so our students get to actually partake in 8-week internships in local elementary schools in our fall semester, and then the spring semester they get to be partner with a local nonprofit organization and spend 6 weeks kind of looking at the ins and outs of what a local nonprofit that directly deals with an issue of social justice does here in Des Moines.
And students come from all the area high schools? I mean, does this take place during the school day?
Yes, it does. All of the students in our Urban Leadership program actually come from the 5 comprehensive high schools in Des Moines Public Schools. But again, students from all the metro areas can take courses at Central Campus.
All right. And you mentioned that this can stand in for another kind of elective.
Correct. I mean,
how does that fit into the school day, traveling to Central Campus to take a class like that?
Yeah, well, our schedule really does dictate a little bit about what youth are capable of doing, because if you take a first block at Central, then you have to kind of stick around for a second block as well. And so what that's really done for those students that are on our first block, it's allowed them to, I think, explore other avenues that previously weren't open to them. A lot of the students that come to Urban Leadership find themselves in the graphic communications department or in the film and broadcasting department. Some of them are into the fashion design program that exists at Central Campus as well. And so photography is another one that our students really are interested in. And so really dependent upon the schedule and the makeup, that can kind of dictate a little bit about how long students spend at Central. But some of them are only there for our class, and then they go right back to their home high school.
All right. I'm talking with Christopher Rollins and Emily Lang. We've been talking about Des Moines Central Campus, their mural project, and they're also co-founders of Run DSM, which we will talk more about in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Now, last week, the city of Des Moines was being covered all over the place because they painted over a mural that was being created by students at Des Moines Central Campus under the tutelage of a local graffiti artist. That coverage made us interested in the program behind that project, Run DSM. And with me now are the co-founders of Run DSM. They're affiliated with Des Moines Central Campus, Christopher Rollins and Emily Lang. And help me out with another definition here. What exactly is Run DSM? Describe it for me.
Yeah, sure. So it kind of comes out of this idea of the elements of hip-hop culture. When Emily and I first met and started doing some of this work, we found that a lot of the youth that we were working with would come into our classes, you know, doing these full-blown hip-hop songs, and a lot of people had stigmatized them for being illiterate or whatever it was. And so what we wanted to do was kind of create an organization that allowed them to really speak on those things and create within those avenues. And so Run DSM is kind of a play on Run DMC a little bit, and just kind of saying that, you know, if you're a young person that is interested in the elements of hip-hop culture, whether that's graffiti writing, DJing, breakdancing, MCing, or spoken word poetry, that this is an organization for you.
No. There's definitely another like play on it as well. We really see our students as the leaders and the next generation of leaders of our city. So we always tell them we want them to run Des Moines in the future. And that's kind of the other play on the organization.
All right. So in getting students involved, I realize that a lot of the work that you've done is with spoken word poetry. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so several years ago when Emily and I were at Harding, the focus was really on fluency and getting young people to be more fluent in their literacy. And so we were doing a lot of, you know, hip-hop work and spoken word work within the confines of the classroom. And at the end of our first year teaching together at Harding, Emily came to me and was like, I really want to do this show. Would you help me kind of produce it and put it on and be an MC for it and get some youth interested in doing it? And that first show was called Share the Mic, Community Voices Creating Change. And we had young people up there that were actually that first show reading poems out of books that they did not write themselves, but poems that really impacted them or stood out to them that they had learned throughout the year. And when we left that event, Emily started looking at ways for us to, I think, get more embedded in spoken word culture. And so we found this festival that was taking place called Brave New Voices that this year will be in its, I think, 20th year of existence,
19th
year of existence, I'm sorry. And so we went out to San Francisco to the Brave New Voices Festival, and we're just immersed in this culture. You know, you had 500 young people from around the world, you know, in these teams that were competing against each other. And it was just beautiful and breathtaking. And, you know, this idea of life as primary text, and they were pouring their souls onto this stage. And so we said, we've got to be able to come back and get our young people to share their own testimonies and turn them into poems and get them on stages. And we knew that that wasn't going to happen if Emily and ourselves were unwilling to write and perform ourselves. And it really just kind of blossomed and grew from there.
So when we got back from the festival, we decided that we wanted to start a weekly writing workshop. We decided we were going to call it Movement 515. And we were going to meet actually at Des Moines Central Campus because we wanted to attract middle and high school kids from all over the district. And so we thought Central Campus was, you know, a hub in the middle of the city that, you know, was equal distance to most of the high schools. And so we put out flyers to all of the English teachers in the district and just tried to, you know, paint all of the schools with these flyers and get kids to come to our workshop. And we had a fancy lesson, and we went down to Central Campus, and for our very first workshop, one student showed up. And we were so excited that someone came, and we just kind of continued for the next few weeks. And what we realized is that most of the kids that we were recruiting were from the north side, because that's where we taught. We taught at Harding, which is on the north side, and it fed into North High School. And so we ended up moving our workshop the second semester to North High School, to a small classroom. And that really, you know, became the home for where Movement 515 really grew. And, you know, now 4 or 5 years later, we meet with kids twice a week, and we have anywhere between 50 and 100 kids every single week that joins us to write, to share their stories, to heal. And it's really a beautiful community that we've been able to build amongst the young people and really fellow teachers and writers and poets from across the city.
How many students do you have involved?
In Movement 515, in the spoken word poetry, I would say we have around 100 kids that either pop in and out throughout the week. But we did extend the Movement 515 community to provide breakdancing workshops and the graffiti writing workshops, which we spoke about earlier.
Right. Now, the Brave New Voices Festival that you mentioned earlier, I know that you will have students participating in the Brave New Voices International Youth Poetry Slam Festival. We'll talk to one of those students here in just a moment. But is there a competition element to what you're doing with this writer's workshop, or is that just something that maybe students can opt into if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a part of what we do, but not necessarily why we do what we do. You know, slam poetry kind of started as a means to get people excited about poetry, to get them into a more, I think, athletic mind state when, you know, people cheer for teams or for individuals. And so we do school versus school slams throughout the school year, and some of our young people are really into just the slamming aspect of what we do. But we also have many young people that come to us that never have any intention of ever necessarily slamming, but sharing pieces that they've written on a stage that we can provide.
All right. Now, speaking of that team for Brave New Voices, Julio Delgadillo is here. He's a junior from North High School, and he's been involved with Run DSM for a number of years and will be participating in the Brave New Voices Poetry Slam in Washington, D.C. in July. Julio, hello.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Now, you got involved when you were in middle school. How did you get drawn into this?
Ms. Rollins was a history teacher at the time and a hip-hop teacher. And I happened to be walking in the hallways when I ran into him and thought he was a really cool guy. Just because the glasses, he almost looked like me. And so it just really intrigued me. And he advised me to look into poetry and the aspect of poetry. And I thought it was like something my grandma would do. But I did look into it. And I just got involved from there. I attended his hip-hop class. I learned more about the culture and more about what it carries in just poetry, but the hip-hop aspect of it as well. And that's how I really got intrigued into poetry.
All right. So as someone who really hadn't thought about writing poetry before, what appeals to you about it? What did it do for you?
I just really like it because it's like I could play on words. It's just like a really creative outlet for me. And not many programs really do this for their students or their peers or anything else. I would say this program, Movement 515, really helps me be supportive, really helps me be engaged rather than just staying at home eating cereal or something. So I will say that it has helped me not only through poetry, but through also school and my life in general. It's helped me be a better person and a character all around.
What kind of a community has developed around it? With any extracurricular activity, of course, you hang out with the same group of people, and that creates kind of a team atmosphere. But tell me about your culture of this organization.
Right. So it's really positive atmosphere. I really like it because a lot of the peers that I hang around with are all about spreading love and helping build each other up. And I really like that. I'm not into all that negative kind of group, kind of like peers who put you down. So hanging out with people from Movement 515 really helped me do my best and bring out my fullest potential, which I really appreciate. And it really expands on Movement 515 as well.
I'm talking with Julio Delgadillo, a junior at North High School, and also Christopher Rollins and Emily Legg. They are the co-founders of Run DSM and also Movement 515. And Julio, I know you're going to be going on and participating in the Brave New Voices Festival. Can you give us a little sample of what you do?
Yeah. All right. So this poem was actually inspired from, because I used to play baseball. And so what I did is I incorporated baseball into one of my poems to like my transition from baseball to poetry. Little Junior always wanted to be a pro baseball player, just like his grandfather. My father taught me to hold a bat so gently as if I carried college credit in every swing. My father had so many dreams for me. And no matter how hard I practiced, I never managed to get a good grip on them. My bat would always leave my hands after every swing as if it could never trust what I was aiming for, because I was never aiming at all. This is my metaphor for any kid that has a dream and is afraid to prosper with their vision. I was entering middle school when I traded in Louisville Sluggers for something as heavy as a number 2 pencil and a voice so royal like it could have hatched from Houston Astros. But my father taught me to plant my feet for any curveball thrown at me, for anybody that poetry wasn't a masculine sport or something a guy shouldn't take part in. But I had tunnel vision throughout my journey and night vision for any darkness. I became the Babe Ruth for every pen I held because I knew what I was aiming for. Poetry is not a walk in the park, but a walk worth falling for. I never wrote a poem about poetry only because it's like I'd have to say a trigger warning for anybody that was damaged by somebody else's craft. And that's all.
That's great. So, Julio, have you gone to the Brave New Voices Festival before, or will this be your first one?
This will be my fourth year, actually.
Fourth year.
Yeah, I don't mean to brag or anything.
and just to reiterate, I mean, to get to go to the festival, you've already succeeded. How many kids get to go, or young people get to go to the festival?
Seven this year. It's supposed to be 6 on the team, but we also have a 7th alternative, which is really just as equivalent as another team member. So, yeah, 7 people.
All right. So the 7th goes. Do they get to perform?
No, but they help us build our craft. They help us polish our poems. They help us really flesh out our work to make it golden.
And what is the experience like?
I will say it's really intimidating. My first year, I was really scared. It was really nerve-wracking. I was really shy at first. But I will say it's like a huge world. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like very loving. It was a different aspect of poetry. I've never seen poetry so alive like I've seen it at BMV. And this being my fourth year, I'm so glad. I'm so thankful that it's my fourth year. That way I could – actually get involved at BMV and get to know every single person there, because it's like an international fest, and meeting international people is really something not a lot of peers get to do. So I'm really thankful and gracious for it.
Well, and you say get involved. Obviously, there's the Poetry Slam. What else is going on there?
There's a lot of things going on. So with BMV, there's different type of genres of poetry, different types of genres of people that are there. With that being like LGBT communities, hip hop, really freestyling MC workshops, spoken word workshops. It's a variety of different things that I wasn't really open minded to, but now I am, and I see the beauty in it, and it's really beautiful. It's a beautiful world at BMV, I will say.
Now, you are a junior in high school, so you're looking at your senior year, and
yeah.
I'm sure you're thinking about the future.
Yeah.
How do you see this experience impacting what you want to do when you leave high school?
I will say it will buffer up my resume tremendously. So that's a little ace up. But I feel like I will take what I've learned in the movement and I will add it into my lifestyle, into my daily objectives in my life, and really just bring it and carry it to my siblings, my family. If I have kids, I would throw it to them. Poetry is not only to myself, but it is a world craft that I want to share.
How do you think this experience has changed you as a person?
It's really helped me advocate for myself, and advocate for anybody in adversity, anybody going through any struggle, challenges. It's really helped me speak as a Latino, a young man, really speak as a minority in general. Me being the older sibling, it's helped me advocate for my family as a whole. And I just love poetry because it's beyond poetry. It's English, it's math, it's science, it's chemistry. It's all of those in one, and I appreciate them for it.
Christopher and Emily, I'm sure it's so exciting to sit here and listen to one of your students talk about what they've gotten out of this project. But I'd love to know what you're thinking while you're listening to Julio about what you've accomplished over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm beaming like a proud parent. You know, we're very close with Julio's family as well. And so, you know, to be able to visualize him as like this seventh grader that came to us that, you know, was barely at my waist, and knowing that he had this tremendous skill set inside of him that maybe he hadn't seen yet. He's the only young person that we've had that has been on every team up until this point. And I think that's just a testament to his work ethic and his ability to, you know, put pen to paper and to keep pushing himself to become better and stronger as a poet. And you can really see that growth. And I think that I'm really proud to think about the fact that he is going to, I think, use his time with us to now go and inspire others. You know, we say a lot that eventually we want the young people that we work with to come and take our spots in this thing, to be the ones to become the facilitators and the workshop, you know, and the artists that are kind of running things. And I definitely see Julio in that light, and to hear him speak on that now, it just kind of further solidifies that.
Emily?
I think it just feels incredibly affirming to have such a strong community of people rallying around our youth. I could have never imagined how Run DSM would blow up, or, you know, and how many young people we would get to work with, and how many young people would be vulnerable enough to share their stories and share their experiences, and just how many connections they have made, and how much impact they've made on our community, and really not just on their peers or other young people, but really on the adults and those of us who are oftentimes a little bit stubborn with our own thinking. I think that they've been able to use their experiences and use their voices to open our minds to a more empathetic way of thinking.
And I know that, you know, you've expanded a great deal in your program in the last few years. And we were talking earlier about the graffiti art mural that has been part of your organization as well. What does the future hold for Run DSM?
We hope to, I think, just continue, you know, impacting young people in the city. And I think, you you know, especially with our day-to-day operations, the classes that we teach within the confines of the school day, we would really love to see the young people that leave us that go into schools of education come back to us so that, you know, our urban leadership class isn't just at Central Campus, but it's at North and it's at Hoover and it's at East and it's at Roosevelt so that and at Lincoln, so that those youth can also have access to what we're doing. Because we get so many requests for Central, so we know that young people are hungry for the art forms. They're hungry for the discussions regarding social justice. And we really believe that it's going to take our young people that have gone through the programming to come back and make it sustainable. So that's really our dream and our goal, is to kind of pass the torch off to them and to see them be the ones to lead and facilitate the workshops and the classes that we teach.
Emily Lang and Christopher Rollins, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-founders of Run DSM and Julio Delgadillo, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And best of luck at the Brave New Voices Festival.
Gracias.
I've been talking with Christopher Rollins and Emily Lang about Run DSM and the urban culture workshop that they teach at Des Moines Central Campus, and a great deal of the work that they do. And Julio Delgadillo is a junior from North High School. He's been involved in Run DSM for a number of years, and he will be participating in the Brave New Voices International Youth Poetry Slam Festival in Washington, D.C. in July. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.